Well, it's a pleasure to welcome a new guest on his debut appearance today, brought to us by Kyle Heineman, the Factum Protocol. Factum uses a distributed ledger and essentially allows for a chronological ordering in the blockchain, efficient storage and retrieval. Paul Snow, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good, thanks. And I understand you're in the Austin area.
Oh, yeah. We're suffering here, you know, 60-degree temperatures in the frigid winter. It's just terrible.
Before we jump into the Factum blockchain, let's start off with your background. You can tell listeners a bit more about your work with Factum, as well as founder of the Texas Bitcoin Conference.
Okay. Well, certainly. I'm an engineer. I got my undergrad in Louisiana, did some work with Texas Instruments for a short period of time, figured out that I was not really psychologically in tune to building bombs, went to graduate school at Texas A&M. I got involved with compilers and interpreters, as well as the digital printing revolution, largely in the form of PostScript. And PostScript is a printing language that allows you to describe a page in a resolution independent fashion. It is the technology behind PDFs. Your PDFs are actually PostScript files. Then I did a bunch of other things, some embedded systems, some even children's software, worked on Outlook a bit for Microsoft, and even had some IBM exposure. But I ended up landing in Texas, where I wrote a rules engine for the state of Texas to evaluate eligibility determination for health and human services assistance programs, Medicare, Medicaid, TANF, SNAP, all these programs that they have. That rules engine used decision tables. It used a very, very deterministic definitions and processing, allowed subject matter experts to write the rules instead of developers. And it's, after 18 years, is still in use here in Texas and in Michigan. And I was doing work on that sector for most of the 2000s, building rules engines for policy and that sort of stuff. And somewhere around 2010, 2011, I started to pay attention to this weird thing called Bitcoin that I had picked up on Slashdot. And I bought my first Bitcoin at 75 cents.
Oh, no.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't buy enough at 75 cents, but certainly enough that I've been very happy. I do recall in 2012 coming in and sitting down on the bed and telling my wife that I may have inadvertently funded our retirement. It was a fascinating thing. 2013, I just really got on board. Unfortunately, I waited till 2013 to really look behind the tech. And so it was then that I became a kind of a believer in what Bitcoin does and what the currency movement can do. And I started a meetup in 2013. I'm still running the meetup more or less today. Toward the end of 2013, I started getting interested in having speakers and bringing in people to talk about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general, all the projects that were coming up, all the distributed autonomous applications. And that led to our meetup and myself forming the Texas Bitcoin Conference. Business being business, I've ended up shepherding the Texas Bitcoin Conference. The last one was last October. We still keep a meetup and a community influence in on the conference. So I was approached by David Johnston to figure out how to build distributed autonomous applications on the blockchain. In 2014, There was an investor, David Johnston, who came to me and pushed me to develop a platform for distributed autonomous applications, and to pick a distributed autonomous application to build. And I started out with the idea of software registration, so that you have trusted computing, you know exactly what software you're executing and how you're configuring your systems. That led me very quickly to the observation that I needed to have identity. I needed to know what the projects were, who the developers were, what the releases were, and basically manage the whole provenance of software and all the parties involved. The dirty little secret about the world today is that all the data that we have in our systems, we have almost no proof of the origin of the data, of the provenance of that data, or even proof that the data hasn't been modified somewhere along the way. And if I'm trying to create absolute proof that the software I'm installing in a system is exactly the software that I intended to install from the parties that I have some trust in, that have reputation, then there needs to be not only identity, but a cryptographic proof, basically allow entities and or identities to actually sign and put their name behind artifacts in a ongoing fluid process. When I looked at that problem and looked at how to put it onto the blockchain, I realized that I needed something like Factum. And so we built Factum. Factum is a data layer for the blockchain. It's designed to provide the provide for the needs of a distributed autonomous protocol. In other words, it has a token that incentivizes people to work in the system, as well as provide for the needs of enterprise usage, and in which case it has a two token system where you burn the tradable tokens into entry credits that have a fixed USD value and are not tradable. And the idea is an entity can buy entry credits from the protocol and use the protocol without ever touching the tradable token that might lead to regulatory issues or security issues or even tax reporting issues.
It sounds as though you have, of course, the security token, and then there's a utility token that, instead of proof of stake, it's proof of work.
Yeah, we use this proof of use is really what it boils down to. You've converted something tradable and has a real world asset into something that has a fixed market cost, but doesn't have any tradable value because you can't trade it. You can't be put on an exchange. You can't give it to someone else. About the only thing you can do is give them your private keys. That doesn't stop you from burning the same token. So it's not a tradable thing. We assert that our token running the as a coin of the realm is still a utility token and not a security. But as far as the parties using the protocol, they are completely in the clear because they never touch a token that is tradable. Therefore, you can't call something a security if you can't trade it or sell it or buy it.
Can you tell us a bit more about the burning process, like an Ethereum gas? Is that somewhat similar?
It is similar. And the early designs of Ethereum were looking at a two-token system where you would have Ether and then you would have gas tokens. Gas became just a way of getting your head around the fees involved. Gas doesn't actually exist in Ethereum as a token. In our case, the factoid is the tradable token. The entry credit is the non-tradable token. You can think of entry credits as prepaid fees, or you can think of them as forever stamps, in the sense that a entry credit allows you to write a entry, the smallest entry into Factum, which is 1K, up to 1K. So you can write a 1K entry for effectively a tenth of a cent.
Would you like to present to our neophytes and folks who are just maybe learning about the blockchain technology, the transparency, the immutability, privacy, as well as real-world practical solutions that the Factum blockchain brings as a decentralized platform?
Certainly, on a newbie level, or you know, looking at the blockchain, there's a lot of questions that come up. A lot of people say, "Well, I can do all that, you know, pick an application. I can do all that in using today's current technology. Why do I need a blockchain?" Almost always, a blockchain is needed to create that immutable ledger, which an immutable is the $10 word to say that you can't change it once you've written it. So think of it as you're writing an application in ink. You know, you don't get to erase the ink, right? And so, but unlike that application, you can't even cross anything out in the blockchain. Once it's written, it's there. Now, that doesn't mean that you cannot put in a transaction to correct. So, for instance, if I paid for something with Bitcoin from a merchant, and I appeal to the merchant that they didn't produce the product, that merchant can send me a refund. What they can't do is pretend the transaction didn't occur, because the transaction to pay them is on the blockchain, and the transaction to send them money back is also on the blockchain. You know, as an introduction to the neophytes, and maybe an example that everyone can relate to, is the meltdown for the mortgage-backed securities in 2008 and 2009, because what happened was very low cost or very risky loans were packaged into securities and marked up as being a, you know, triple A type assets, and sold in the market, and they weren't. And anybody who's watched The Big Short realizes, you know, the games that were played, and then it all melted down. The interesting thing is there were trillions of dollars of value that disappeared, largely due to systemic fraud and systemically bad processes. And what we want to do with the blockchain is ensure that the processes at each step along the way, in the loan origination process, the loan evaluation process, the loan packaging process, that there are actual names put to, you know, reputations put to each step in the process. And the blockchain is essential to this, because you can't rely on all the individual players to maintain their records, because this was one of the things we found out when we started investigating after the meltdown.
Yes, exactly. The subprime meltdown, the alt A's, and the ninja loans.
Yeah, but exactly to your point, because nobody's name is on the steps, most of those people got away with it. Very, very few people were fined. I mean, there were some fines handed to banks, you know, on a systemic level, but the exact malfeasance was lost because the record keeping was so bad. And we've now tried to improve the record keeping, but we still have the same technology, the same databases that can be modified, the same difficulty in coordinating different businesses. You know, for example, if a business is keeping really good records, but it happens to be one of the ones that gets crushed and goes out of business, where's the system of record to track the stuff that was in their databases? They've liquidated, they've destroyed their systems, they've shut down the servers. You know, all that data is lost, and it's not possible to transfer the records from one system of record to another system of record in any other fashion other than hearsay.
In comes the Factum blockchain, transparency, and an easy to find digital trail.
Right, and you can create the digital trails, you can create the hashes. At every step of the way, you can say, do I have all the data? If you have all the data that matches all the hashes within a particular audit trail for a particular process, then you know you have all your data. And by the way, this is not revealing any of this data to the world. It's only cryptographic proof that the data that you have in your system came from another system and has not been modified or changed since that system said this is the data. So you say this is the data, you put the hashes in the blockchain, the next system comes along, they say, give me this process, this loan. Oh, here's 10 hashes. I need 10 documents. The documents match. Bingo. I have all the data.
Let's talk about the peer-to-peer network features. I mean, this is interesting. If we take a look at BitShares, proof of stake, that's, I think, rather compelling and a very intriguing platform. You have a system or a network of these servers where the membership is based on the community support and performance of each member.
First off, BitShares is distributed proof of stake. So they use their, but it plays right into some descriptions to elucidate how Factum is built, because that distributed proof of stake is used to record data and in BitShares. And it's proven to be at least stable enough for the system to continue running for, I don't know, probably over 5 years now. The way Factum is constructed is there are a number of servers that are part of an authority set, and those servers become servers because those people that have a standing in the network support them. And the highest supported parties, they're in the authority set, and they run the protocol. This is a bit of a play on distributed proof of a delegated proof of stake, like BitShares, because we don't build the blocks with our stake. We elect the parties that build the blocks. So it's, if you think of BitShares as democracy, we're a republic. We have identified parties that are running the system. That means that they have to campaign to the community in order to maintain their standing, to maintain their role as running the system. Furthermore, standing in our system is more complex. We create categories of standing. We are going to allow you to stake tokens, and this is what you do in BitShares. But in addition to that, because we have a separate token for fees, and fees represent the use of the protocol, then the part people that have purchased intracredits have standing based off of that, which we kind of think of as proof of use, because there's almost no reason to burn tokens into a non-tradable, non-fungible asset, unless you're using that asset for what it's designed to do, which is use the protocol. We have grants in our system that build infrastructure and successful completion of value in those grants provides standing, as well as efficiency. Those people that are running the protocol, they're budgeted X amount of tokens every month. You know, it's paid out weekly, but at a certain cadence, they are paid tokens for running the protocol. Any amount of those tokens they leave on the table, that is efficiency. They're more efficient. They use fewer tokens to do their work. That efficiency is used as collateral in the system as part of the standing. Anyway, the idea is, because we have these different modes of standing in our system, and those modes are combined kind of like your grade in school with a homework grade and a quiz grade and a test grade and so forth, they're combined in different channels. It means that the protocol is very difficult to attack the way some proof of share or proof of stake systems are attacked by somebody who just throws a bunch of tokens at it. Here you have to throw effort at it. You have to contribute to the community. You have to use the protocol, and you have to stake. And so no one category can rule the system. It's a very social system.
Can you, as we wrap up here today, give our listeners an overview of where you see the Factum blockchain? What's the evolution here, and where will we be in, let's say, 1 to 3 years?
Well, we're increasingly being used to back smart contracts and back infrastructure like IoT infrastructure, medical records distribution, loan origination, any process that tends to be litigious, allowing the parties to document what they're doing. Digital rights management is also big. What we've done here is we've built a general purpose data integrity layer that does not hem the users into a particular way of looking at their problems. And so in the next 1 to 3 years, we're going to see data integrity as being viewed as more important than it currently is in databases and in the information that different systems collect. And we're going to look at digital identity differently. How do I create a digital identity that actually manages aspects of my identity instead of simply being a trivia contest where anyone who has enough information about you can be you just because they can win the trivia contest? These kinds of radical changes are going to make the system, the world, more intuitive, more secure, more private. Factum is going to play a large role in that.
You did bring up IoT or Internet of Things, and this is an area of keen interest. During a project I participated with Assurant Insurance, it became abundantly clear that there will be an enormous explosion, you might say. I think that's almost an understatement, in this entire new arena where we just have, you know, interoperability between virtually every device, your washing machine, your laptop, your cell phone, your iPhone, your Android, the refrigerator. It's all becoming connected, and then there will be networks within networks. Can you expand just briefly on how the Factum blockchain could be a facilitator in this arena?
Oh, certainly. We went through a lot of these issues working with the Department of Homeland Security, three phases, finishing up the fourth phase of a project to look at how the blockchain can help to secure IoT devices, particularly sensors on the border. Drug runners, human traffickers, all sorts of these people that are crossing the border are very, very sophisticated. You would expect drug gangs who are bringing in literally billions of dollars to have the ability to hire the best technical people to compromise systems. And so what we did was we created strong digital identities for those devices that are being deployed. And we've created strong digital identities for the locations where those devices are deployed. And those mechanisms allow us to prevent someone from spoofing a device, because it's not just replacing the device with the same brand and same physical attributes as the device that they want to move. It also means penetrating a digital identity system backed by cryptography. That is a road too far. It's just too much. And so we can maintain the security of the device that way. In other words, they can replace the device, but the device without the identity will be rejected by the system. And thus we know a device has been taken out. One of their common things is to take a device, point it in another direction, knock out the correct device, and suddenly they've created a blind spot. Spoofing of devices is a real problem for them.
Factum actually anchors its material or entries directly into the Bitcoin blockchain. Am I correct?
No, you're exactly correct. We collect all the data into a Merkle root every 10 minutes, and we write that hash into the Bitcoin blockchain. For people that don't understand Merkle trees, just think of it as a sports bracket. And just like you can watch your favorite team throughout the year, like the Saints and the absolute theft of the last game, I only watch Saints games but I can still know with confidence that they should have made it to the Super Bowl this year by simply watching the games they played and ignoring everything else. And that's what a Merkle tree does. It, when you have data that's written into Factum, there's a cryptographic proof that goes to that Super Bowl Merkle tree route that we write into the Bitcoin blockchain. And we're also writing into Ethereum as well. So for a tenth of a cent, you can write data into Factum and you can have a cryptographic proof against the Bitcoin blockchain that your data has not been modified. I'll make one other point, because I missed this when we were talking about ProofShare. One of the reasons we do anchoring, by the way, we were the project that coined the term anchoring. The reason we do anchoring is that the historical past is best proven with proof of work, because it proves so many systems agreed or saw the information that you have printed, just like putting a hash into the New York Times proves that that hash existed at a particular time. This means that the historical record can't be changed. And one of the problems with distributed proof of stake is reconstructing stake through the historical record is very hard. Counting zeros in a hash is very easy. That's how you define the proof of work. And so mathematically, this is how we secure the blockchain.
Right. Thank you for that clarification. And, you know, for our budding developers, this Factum blockchain was built from the ground up. Would you like to share some contact information and anything else you'd like to leave with the listeners, please?
Well, our website is factum.com, and we have a Reddit that's very active at that's basically Factum is the subreddit on Reddit. Factum is F-A-T-C-O-M. And the first or the pegged entry at the top gives you links to all kinds of information about Factum, the Factum protocol, of Factum Inc., the company that I happen to work for. We're only one of 25 companies that are running the protocol. So go to Reddit, look at all the links, and find all this huge amount of information about our system and our protocol.
CEO Paul Snow, we're going to look forward to hearing more about the Factum blockchain, the entire project. Please keep us updated. If you have anything else, maybe pass it along to Kyle so we can set up an interview.
Absolutely. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. Goldseek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.